Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
You're on the Escape Pod, Joy 94.9. Welcome back to the Escape Pod after your week off.
Yes, I'm fasting. I am fasting. The trip to Tasmania, where you indulge in breakfast, lunch and dinner for 9 days straight.
Oh, and Tassie's so good for food, right?
It is such a good place for food. Yep, so I am fasting.
How long had it been since you'd been to Tasmania
before this trip? Do you know, it was nearly 18 years.
Oh, ruddy heck.
Yes, I know. I can't believe it. It was 18 years and it was almost in exactly
the same
time. So you must
have been six.
I was just five. But a lovely smooth ride over on the Spirit of Tasmania. Mm-hmm. Highly rated. Just drive the car in, go upstairs to your cabin, either have dinner in the restaurant and then wake up the next morning and drive off in Davenport.
Yeah.
Where there's nothing open at 6 a.m.
Whoopa days. So take a thermos of tea.
Take a thermos of tea or do what we do and just drive straight to Strawn.
Yeah, okay. How far is that?
A few hours drive down the west coast.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So would you recommend Tassie?
I would, without a shadow of a doubt. And
what's the number one thing that really stuck out to you?
Oh, I think the environment of the West Coast and the drive from Strawn up to Taralea in the Highlands and fly fishing. So if I was going to Tasmania, even if you don't think you're into fly fishing, I would still get a fly fishing guide and have a day out on the rivers or the lakes. It's just a magic way to experience a pristine environment.
Sold. I'm going to Tassie. I don't know when, I don't know how.
Yeah, definitely have to. And if that doesn't take your fancy, play golf.
Yeah.
Beautiful golf courses. And if that doesn't work, go to the wineries.
And eat your way around, drink your way around.
Exactly. And if that doesn't work, stay home.
And you were saying earlier that the level of hospitality and service is just world class and
out of
so
this
much
world.
Yeah.
It was one thing that people had said to me that, well, you know, this time you're not going as a tourism professional, you're actually going as a punter. And as a punter, I was really impressed by the quality of hospitality and the dedication that people have to their tourism product. It really did show it was outstanding. And I can understand why they're now pulling in tourists from all over the world. They did it very well. Trip to Mona, of course, you have to fit in.
Is that great?
Mona. Well, this is my third time to Mona, but it was my first time going on the ferry.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, when I wasn't quite true before when I said 18 years. It was 18 years since I'd been on the ferry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
And you would recommend most highly Tassie as a weekend break, or do you say go spend a bit more time?
I think for a weekend you could fly into Hobart and do Mona and maybe Salamanca Place and then zip out. But if you actually wanted to do some of the other beautiful landscapes it has to offer, I would allow a week.
A week.
At least. And that might be just to, you know, do the East Coast or just to do the West Coast. Because the quality of the fixtures and the fittings, I think, and, you know, and I do a bit of travel these days, I think Tasmanians have the best bathroom fit out in their independent boutique hotels and B&Bs ever.
That's a ringing endorsement.
At Taralea, the floor of the bathroom was heated. Yes, exactly. That was my reaction.
Be still my German heart.
So I was, and you know, imagine being stuck in a library with a wood-fired fireplace roaring and 150 single malt whiskies.
And a Labrador.
No Labrador, but you know, a partner. You know, there you go, Labrador.
Whatever way you like. And we have a great show lined up today, Jo. We've got a beautiful guest and she's sitting right next to you.
We do. We have Rose Cannizzaro. Welcome, Rose.
Thank you. Thank you for having me along today.
Welcome to Joy 94.9.
Thank you. I'm really looking forward to sharing my travel adventures with you.
Well, you've been to some far-flung and exotic places, Rose. What inspired you? What was your journey before the journey?
Probably the last few years, I have been very fortunate in having the opportunity to indulge in quite a few different travel experiences, and I had travelled quite extensively through Asia, and we've also travelled through Europe quite extensively. So on our way to Europe last year, we had stopped at Abu Dhabi and also Dubai, and we'd spent quite a bit of time there. And I guess the natural progression would be to explore the Middle East a bit further. And I think on everybody's bucket list is the fact that they'd like to visit Egypt and also Petra and some places in Jordan. And so we tried to incorporate as much as we could in our travels over there, because it's not that easy to get from Australia across to most places. And so I think with some thoughtful planning, you can actually cover quite a few very, very interesting experiences in the Middle East.
Did you do your own itinerary, Rose?
I'm very, very fortunate, because I have a brother who is very keen on travel, and he's also an exceptional planner. And we try and incorporate, we certainly plan our
You've made his qualities sound very positive. I bet there are other things that happen with those qualities.
He's terrific. He's got a very keen interest. He has been quite a keen traveller, and he has been to many places himself. But he spends quite a lot of time researching and investigating the possibility of linking different sort of trips and different really interesting places, so that you actually maximise the time that you have at your disposal. You're not wasting a lot of time sitting around or sort of waiting to sort of connect. He actually sort of, he manages to incorporate the very, very best of lots of places, and he finds the most efficient way of travelling from one place to the next.
So you have a logistics guru in the family?
Absolutely. And I'm very, very fortunate, because that's not my forte, but I'm certainly able to take advantage of his skills. And it actually makes for very, very thorough planning, makes for a very smooth trip, and it also avoids any issues, and also avoids a lot of time wasting, because time is really precious when you're away, and maximising, knowing what you want to do and how you're actually going to do it, and actually pre-booking and pre-paying for a lot of that ensures for a very, very smooth trip
and
very enjoyable
stress.
One. Absolutely, yeah.
Which we're all about.
Absolutely.
At Escape Pod on Joy 94.9, we like the whole stress reduction of travel, and that can really colour the whole experience. So take us through, now that you've made the decision you wanted to go to the Middle East, have you travelled extensively before? That was Middle East high on your list, or had you already been to Europe and Asia?
I've done quite a few trips to India, which I really enjoyed. We'd been to Europe on many occasions. Having been born in Italy, we've sort of got the connection there. So we've travelled quite extensively through Italy. We've been to America. We did a terrific trip to Japan a few years ago. So we had travelled to a number of destinations, and the Middle East seemed like a natural progression. And we thought that it certainly provided lots of opportunities to explore, but also to experience a really different culture. And what we had seen in our stay in previous years in Dubai and also in Abu Dhabi, it sort of whetted our appetite. And we thought that it would be really worthwhile to really spend some quality time there and to do some research before we actually launched into the trip, so that we actually knew what we wanted to target before we left. Yeah.
So when you landed for the first time in the Middle East, it can be quite confronting because the environment is quite unusual and alien, and also the heat and humidity, if you at the right time of year, can be very confronting. What was the first thing that really impressed on you? Was it environmental, or was it the people? What impacted you the most?
Probably culturally, the people are just not different. Well, they are really different. And that I think you're sort of looking at a way of doing things, and also a way of dressing and a way of interacting that is quite different to what we're used to, because being a fairly independent woman, I'm quite used to sort of doing my own thing and sort of feeling I have access to anyone and, you know, anywhere. Whereas I think you need to be more culturally respectful, and you sort of take your lead off or from the people in the place that you're visiting. And I found that some places were far more, well, all of them, I think a woman's place isn't quite as prominent as our place here in, say, a Western society. And you just need to sort of be a little bit mindful about how you approach people and how you approach situations and the way you present yourself as well.
So did you change your dress while you were away?
I actually learned when I had travelled to India, and I mean, normally I'm a very conservative dresser anyway, but I found a lot of the things that I actually took with me were quite inappropriate. And I found that it's far better to err on the side of caution and to wear just long sleeve shirts or tops and cover the trousers or your legs.
Yes.
Because really, I think most of the places in the Middle East, although particularly the main cities, they're quite used to dealing with tourists and foreigners, etc. I think that you feel more comfortable if you are a little bit more respectful of their culture and their norms, I guess.
That's really interesting, Rosa.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Now, our guest today is Rose Cannizzaro. Now, Rose has been to the Middle East, and we're just about to launch into the first stop, which was Brunei.
Yes.
Rose, what was it like to land in Brunei?
It was very, very interesting. I thought the people are certainly very, very welcoming, but culturally it's very, very different to what we're used to. It's a very I think the women are still very, very secondary, I think, compared to the sort of life we have here. Although the tour guide that we had was saying that the country's coming along in leaps and bounds at the moment, and there's a high focus on education and on also tourism opening up the country. But it was culturally, I think it's very, very interesting, a place to visit. Very, very beautiful countryside. Environmentally, I think there's lots of lovely treks and walks that people would really, really enjoy. We toured there was a museum that has been set up by the Sultan, and that was it sort of really gave an insight into certainly the traditions and the culture of the people there. They were saying that the young girl that our tour guide was saying that over the last few years in particular, that I think medically and educationally a lot of opportunities have been presented to the people there. Food-wise, lots of wonderful opportunities to sample a variety of certainly very, very interesting flavours.
Yeah.
While we were there, we went to visit the fishing village, mm-hmm. which was terrific. For me, it was a highlight. And also the night market that also enabled you to sample lots of the culinary treats that are available to the people there. But
so
I thought
Brunei food is similar to Malaysian.
Much so. You know, and lots of fish and lots of, but very, very savoury and very, very tasty. A well-structured and well-organised place, very, very green, very, very lush, very, very welcoming.
However,
no alcohol.
It's worth saying just recently the Sultan of Brunei has passed a law permitting the stoning to the death of people who have extramarital affairs or same-sex sex. This is also for extramarital rape and other horrible crimes, but it's very important to make sure that people understand Brunei is very conservative.
Extremely
it's very
so.
Challenging for gay, lesbian, bisexual, intersex and queer travellers.
Yeah, and also no alcohol, not music, but if you're looking for a disco or somewhere to really go out and party, it's just not there. Very, very conservative, ultra conservative. And I know that even our tour guide, she was talking, because we were talking about the punishments for different crimes and whatever, and it's quite sort of factual. It's quite accepted that, you know, stoning, or they're quite comfortable with that as being a punishment. And one of the people on the in the group that were on the tour had actually said, look, would they actually follow that through? And she said, look, it is actually part of our culture, and it seems sort of extreme for us to actually have to even hear that, because you'd think that most people would be way beyond that these days, but culturally it is quite acceptable, and it is ultra conservative. It was different. The reason why Brunei wasn't really a place, we were more interested in visiting like Egypt and Jordan, etc. But
so Brunei, let's leave Brunei and their unusual and harsh ways of dealing with people who are born, like a lot of the listeners to Joy 94.9. I'm sure that we're going to find many other airlines that will treat us with a lot more respect, or destinations that will treat us a lot more with a lot more respect than Brunei.
But so Egypt was next on the list.
Yeah, and Egypt's a fascinating country with a huge history behind it.
Egypt was fantastic, and I think
very interesting people.
And how was it travelling this year? Because there's been so much upheaval.
Do you know, I was actually really impressed, because although the press is very negative here, the Egyptian people have suffered a lot because of what has been happening there, and particularly tourism has suffered terribly.
So that hurts the people again.
But very, very much so. And I think that we were very fortunate, because we were treated so well by the people that we came across, because they're really crying out to actually encourage people to visit their country, because they are suffering economically, but terribly. We stayed in the Ramesses Hilton, which is like across the road, very close to Churia Square, and also almost opposite, across the freeway from the Egyptian Museum. And the people there, first of all, security in the hotel was fantastic. They really try and demonstrate that they're looking after you as well as they can, and they really bend over backwards to ensure that you are comfortable. I mean, they sort of they upgraded us to, you know, better suites, and they give you access to all different facilities, because they're really trying to say, look, go back to your country and say that, you know, tourists are really welcome here and we will look after you. And also we found that with the tour guide, that we went with Pro Tours, and they were excellent in that our tour guides and our drivers really were very, very, very knowledgeable, but they were very prompt, they were very professional, and they looked after us extremely well.
Did you feel unsafe at all during your time in Egypt?
Do you know, not really, but first of all, we didn't go looking for trouble.
Yeah. And that's always a good point, isn't it?
Exactly. And the thing is, too, that we sort of had our own itinerary, and we didn't sort of venture into areas that we thought
might have been
would be trouble. Exactly. And we also sort of heeded the advice of the people who actually knew what they were doing. On the day that we went to the Giza pyramids, it was a Friday, and we had been told that historically Friday was the day where there tended to be
tension.
And our guide was marvellous in that he actually kept in contact with base to ensure that to basically have an idea of where there were pockets of trouble if that was to occur, so that he could steer us away from that. But it was it was very fortunate for us, because when we went to the pyramids, basically they had 280 people go through on that day. Normally they have about 50,000. That says a lot for the people there, and that they truly are suffering. Also, as we travelled throughout Egypt, there are many places like at Luxor and Abu Simbel where they have the sound and light show, and they've had to cancel because they just don't have the people there to sustain it. I mean, when we went to the sound and light show at the Giza pyramids, there would have been probably about 30 people there, and they're seating for thousands and thousands of people there.
So the atmosphere, was it still acceptable, or was it enjoyable?
Do you know what it is? It is really enjoyable, and you have the attention of, you know, the tour guides and the people who run these places, which is certainly a bonus for us, because, I mean, you have the places almost to yourself, and it's a privilege to be there and to be able to sort of experience these things. But it's very sad for the people, I think, because they're really missing out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm. So Egypt was a wonderful experience, and the hospitality of the Egyptians is famous.
Absolutely, and the generosity. They are a wonderful people.
Yeah.
Exactly, yes.
And from Egypt, you jumped across the border into Jordan.
Well, we travelled from Cairo. We travelled to Sharm el-Sheikh. So that from Sharm el-Sheikh, it's easier to actually get a tour, like a bus ride, from Sharm el-Sheikh to the border at Taba. And then from there we went into Jerusalem. We drove into Jerusalem. And then from Jerusalem, then we went to Jordan. We went from Jerusalem to Eilat. And then from Eilat, we went into Jordan and
from
Eilat,
so then you would have gone, yeah, so Petra, exactly. Wadi Rum.
Exactly, yes, exactly, which was exceptional, really extraordinary.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Where is this afternoon going?
Oh, it's going somewhere cruisy and jazzy.
Hmm. I feel like being languid.
Well, that's what Saturday afternoons are for.
It's something I don't often feel like doing.
Yeah, it's that time of the day when you're thinking, what will I wear when I go out to dinner tonight?
Mm. And how quickly can I open that bottle of fermented grape juice when I get when I get home this afternoon and just really relax
Although
and
Rose
enjoy a beautiful
Saturday. Although Rose has had to give up some fermented grape juice on her tours of the Middle East.
Yeah, so Brunei, no good. Egypt, awesome.
Yes.
Jordan.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Petra has, it's been a lifelong dream of mine to actually visit there. But Wadi Rum was an unexpected joy. I mean,
why?
The countryside is just awe inspiring. The colours, breathtaking, and just the grandeur of the place, just extraordinary. I mean,
how would you paint that picture?
Oh, it's very, very difficult to paint. I think one of the photographs that I took of our travels, it actually showed these gorgeous red geological structures in the background, and you know, my brother was in the foreground and he was just sort of microscopic, and it just shows the grandeur and the beauty of the area. It was just magnificent. I really didn't know beforehand very much about the geology of the area, but it really is, it's just breathtaking. It really is just beautiful. That was one of the highlights of the trip for me. Really unexpected. I mean, Petra, I knew what to expect, and it didn't disappoint.
It didn't disappoint.
No.
So how explain how you go through this process to get to the end destination, because a lot of people don't realise that Petra isn't just sitting there.
No.
You've got to work for it.
Yes.
Tell us about your journey.
Well, you're actually, you're asking me as in from when you arrive.
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
the Sikh.
From the entranceway, you actually need to decide whether you're going to sort of travel in, because the actual, the structures or the city that's actually been carved out of stone is quite a distance from the entrance to Petra Park. And you can decide to either go by horse. Most people like to walk, and if you are a keen walker, that in itself is a really wonderful experience. Or you can decide to get a horse and cart if you feel that you can't walk the distance, because it's actually a good 3 to 4 kilometres from the actual entrance to the park to where you enter the city. And to actually get there, you have to travel through these vast, well, it's almost like canyons, that very tight canyon way, that in itself it's quite an experience, and then it opens up into this just magnificent city that's been carved into stone, and apparently they've sort of carved it from the top down rather than you think that
they'd go from the bottom up.
Absolutely. But just extraordinary and really awe-inspiring, and to think that, you know, people actually inhabited some of the caves up until the 1980s, it's quite extraordinary. But it was certainly a lifelong dream of mine to visit the place, and it didn't disappoint. But I loved even travelling from the border of from Eilat, when we travelled across into Jordan, and then from the border to up to Petra, the countryside is really extraordinary, really sort of breathtaking. It's almost, when you see these biblical films, that's exactly what you get, but it's very grand and very awe-inspiring. It was fabulous, really fabulous.
And the architecture behind the Petra is the famous bit is the Al Khazna, the old treasury.
Yes.
Did you get to go inside? Did you have
no,
a look?
No, I, I, I didn't get... Well, people weren't actually going inside. There was sort of like a guard stationed the front for whatever reason, but people weren't venturing in and out. No, mm-hmm. not of the Treasury, which is sort of... It's almost like the picture-perfect card of, you know, when you visit Petra, but no. We sort of... We basically ambled through up until you get to the monastery, which is like the far end of Petra. And you could actually visit some of the tombs and some of the dwellings along the way. Some of them were open, but in the old Treasury building, no, I didn't enter it. And I didn't see other people going in as either. When we were there.
Right, okay. Mm. So did you take one of the horse buggies back after all this exploring around Petra? Because it's quite a...
It's true. I would have personally... I like to walk. There were three of us that travelled together, but my brother, who had organised the trip, he had had open-heart surgery just before we left, and so we didn't think it was a really good idea to
over-exert himself.
Exactly.
Yes. And speaking of your
yeah.
brother,
yes.
Ben has emailed in and yes. wants to know that it's Frank, isn't
yes,
it, your brother?
Yes, yes.
If Frank is just so good at putting together yes. these itineraries, does he put them up on a blog or a website or anything
no.
like that for other people to see what you've done?
Yeah, no, do you know what? It's actually like he's not interested in – he does it, I think – purely for individual satisfaction, but he has organised, when we went to Japan, he organised a fantastic itinerary there. And I know that I like to travel, and many of my friends travel. And when I've shared my travel experiences, I'll say, oh my gosh, you know, why doesn't he do this for a living? It actually takes a lot of time and effort to put in the research, and and also what he selects is very individual. It suits...
So you just have to be a friend of Frank.
Exactly. But certainly I know that anyone in our family or extended friends who think about travelling, they'll try and pick his brain, because he has got really wonderful ideas of how to maximise a journey or a trip to any part of the world. He has travelled himself in the past, and I think that gives him an idea, and he's also very, very keen on looking at documentaries about interesting places in the world. On this trip, we actually went in Abu Dhabi. We went to the Falcon Hospital, which was fantastic. But we'd seen that on, I
People
think,
don't
SBS.
Believe that it exists.
It does exist. Mm. And, you know, that was... We'd been to Abu Dhabi last year and we did lots of things, but this year we specifically wanted to visit the Falcon Hospital, and it was
just
marvellous.
So explain to
marvellous.
The listeners, because falconry is a huge sport
Absolutely.
In all the Gulf countries, and people take their falcons very seriously.
Absolutely.
And we're not talking about Fords.
Yeah.
We're talking about real living...
Feathers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mouse hunting...
Absolutely.
Incredibly well-trained birds.
Absolutely.
So tell us about the hospital.
It's actually like going to visit a vet's, but it is a hospital that is specifically for looking after these marvellous birds.
Mm.
And all day they're stunning and they're so well trained, but all day there is a stream of gentlemen, no ladies, all gentlemen that actually come in with their falcons, and you can actually tell that these birds are part of their family. Like, we adore our dogs and we look after our dogs, these falcons are well and truly part of their family. And the birds are allowed to actually travel by air with their owners, and they have their own passports. And in the hospitals, they're taking
in... This is serious.
It's deadly serious. You walk into the waiting room and they have these planks, and the owners actually set down their falcons, and the falcons are hooded to just calm them down. But when you speak, the falcon actually turns its head towards the sound. They're very, very smart animals, very smart, but really well behaved. And you go in the waiting room and you'll see rows and rows of these animals waiting to be treated. And
how concerned are the people that bring them in?
They're very calm, because the treatment is extraordinary. I mean, they have a surgery, and they actually showed a procedure being conducted where there's a cone, and they'll put the bird to sleep, and they'll like trim the toenails or give them the injections that they need, or because if they apparently if they have a damaged feather, they're not able to hunt, and so they have these drawers of all these different types of feathers where they can actually replace the feather until the animal molts and then sort of regrows a new set of feathers. Fascinating, absolutely fascinating. But the birds are very relaxed, and the owners, they're very relaxed. It's like us taking our animal to the vets annually for their annual checkup. But fascinating, and just a wonderful experience, a really fantastic thing to be able to see and do.
Yeah, and the birds are just absolutely magnificent.
Stunning birds, absolutely stunning. You know.
So but the falcon can have a passport, but ladies can't drive.
Well, that's, you know, in the UAE, women do drive.
Yes, they do, yeah.
Oh, they drive a lot to every shopping mall they can find. It's, the UAE is different. The Saudi across the border, however,
a bit different. Yeah.
Not so much. Yeah. And Yemen across another border.
So even less.
The neighbourhood has some peaks and troughs. Yes. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But the rights of the women in the UAE are significantly more advanced than many of the other Gulf countries. Mm. But so, after the Falcon Hospital, what was the most impressive thing about Abu Dhabi? Because a lot of people like the idea of going there because it's a stopover to break up the trip to Europe or wherever they're going. And, you know, there's flashy malls and stuff. What else was there in Abu Dhabi?
I think the mosque there is just the most magnificent thing I had.
Which one?
The main one, the huge, I don't recall the name, but
Sheikh Zayed.
The main mosque.
I mean, with the white, it looks like boobs on the top.
Do you know, I've seen a lot of mosques in my life, but really nothing beats that one.
It that's just a Sheikh Zayed.
Just the most extraordinary thing. We only stayed in Abu Dhabi this time. Well, we actually, I think, specifically went because we wanted to go to the Falcon Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
We had been to Abu Dhabi. We were there last year and we'd stayed there a while last year, and that's when we'd been to the mosque. But it's the most extraordinary thing. I mean, the chandeliers, the white marble, the carpet that is just superb, absolutely superb, all handmade, but it's just the most beautiful place to go and visit, quite extraordinary, really extraordinary. And also I think a lot of the buildings in the main city of Abu Dhabi, exceptional, along the waterways, it's just a beautiful place, a beautiful city to go and visit. But also they seem to be quite accepting of visitors. Some places are a little bit more standoffish, but I found like in Doha and also in Abu Dhabi and Dubai, they're quite accepting. I think if you're respectful of their customs, generally speaking, the people there are very welcoming and accepting of visitors.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Now, Rose, you've told us all about your trip to the Middle East, and I know that we haven't covered every destination because you had an extensive itinerary. And you've said, you've already given it away by saying that you love to travel. Where are some of your favourite places in the world to be?
I think, being an Italian, of course, Italy is always a favourite. But
so where, though? Italy's a big country, and it's such a... Because people from Italy who have moved to Australia come from all different parts of Italy. So what's your favourite?
I come from the north. I was born it's in the province of Udine, which is an hour north of Venice, and so that certainly has...
Way to Bassano del Grappa.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, in the mountains. And so Italy, Rome, I don't think you can beat. Venice, you can't beat. Most places in Italy, I think for sentimental reasons, are very, very special to me. But I think for places that were very, very different that I really enjoyed, India I found absolutely fascinating.
What is it that you personally found with India? Because everyone who goes to India loves it. But what did you really get from
it? I think that the colours, the sounds. I mean, travelling around Rajasthan I thought was extraordinary. I mean, some of the history behind the old forts, amazing. But just driving along long stretches of road from one place to another, and then seeing the colourful costumes and the women sort of walking along, you know, balancing these, you know, things and seeing camel trains, you know, along the countryside. It's just such an extraordinary place. You know, the colours and the sounds
and
the smells
amazing.
And the people are just extraordinary, quite extraordinary. Mm. It's not an easy place to travel through, but I think if you're open and you're prepared not to sort of demand the luxury, etc., India has a lot to offer. And the other place that I really love too, which I thought I really didn't have a lot of ambitions to go and visit, but we decided that we'd go and explore anyway, was Japan. Japan, I thought, was really an interesting place. Very, very quirky, but the people were very
it's
warm.
A great word.
It's terrific. And
because the Japanese have just got their own thing going
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. But they're very comfortable with who they are. You've got the busyness and, you know, just the overstimulation of Tokyo, and then you've got places, the very traditional places like Kyoto and Takayama. We were there when it was snowing, and it's just such a traditional place. It was beautiful, and it's just a very, very culturally diverse place that has a lot of things to offer, I think, for everybody. But the people are very warm. The transport is extraordinary. I mean, very easy to get from one place to the other, and lots to be able to enjoy, I think. So those two places really stood out for me, I think.
Yeah, and they're both very, very different.
They are very diverse.
Yeah, and where's your next trip?
We're looking at perhaps travelling to South America next year, because it's one place that we haven't really experienced. I mean, we'd love to go to Cuba and Mexico as well, but South America is probably the next big trip that we've got on our radar. Really looking forward to that. Yes.
Well, Cuba's a special place of mine, so yes. I'd definitely say if you're in the area, check in.
Yes.
It is definitely a beautiful place.
It is, I could imagine, yes.
Mm. Well, that's a long trip.
So what's brought that on? That's a huge trip.
I think from the previous trips that we've had, we've sort of managed to tackle, or I guess identify, different pockets that are strategically located, and then try and visit and do as much as we can while we're there. And so I think South America was something that we haven't really gone anywhere near. I mean, we've been to the States, and we've, you know, New York and Los Angeles and into Canada, etc. But we just thought that culturally it would be something different to what we've done so far. And also there are lots of historical places that would be certainly worth visiting. So, and you need quite a bit of time, because geographically some of the places are quite...
Oh, they're not close together.
No, no. And you actually do need the time to be able to visit and explore.
Yep. Yeah. And on all of your travels then, what are your personal travel tips? What are the things that you run through that put you in a good place to have a good trip?
I think I've learned to pack economically.
Yep.
To... also be very, very mindful of the sorts of things. I think being a female and some of the places that you visit, you need to sort of be mindful about what you wear. And so I really tend to dress very conservatively, ensure that you bring lots of the adapters, etc., because yes. Technology, you need to be able to access family and friends while you're away, and that's sort of important, because sometimes it's not that easy to
one of our previous guests has even suggested taking a power board.
Well,
so that was his top tip, and I think a lot of people have taken Mark up on that, and they now pack a power board.
Mm. Well, all those little things I think make a big difference, and you sort of think, I've learned that you don't need all that much when you travel, that, you know, you need to sort of be very...
No, because you're seeing different people every day. It's not like you're seeing the same people. You can wear the same outfit.
Yeah, but I'd say that they're probably the most important things that I found would make things easier for me, you know. And not to sort of stress that much. I know when my daughter travels, she'll go away for a week, and she sort of has got a trunk load of things, and you think, you know, don't waste your time. Yeah. So I think that it really pays. It makes your life a lot easier too, not having to sort of lug around so much with you, and you certainly don't need it.
I think, you know, so as women travelling as well, you have to realise that there could come a situation where you need to carry everything.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Be mindful of how much you actually can
absolutely,
carry, for sure.
Yes, yeah.
Well, they're great tips. Yes. Packing light is something yes. that we advocate very heavily on the show. And every guest who travels regularly says the same thing. Mm. So everybody out there, travel light.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. You got to carry it.
Exactly.
You do. Yes.
Carry it. And then you've got to leave a bit of room for souvenirs
to bring
and
back.
Knickknacks.
Exactly.
Yes, yeah. There's always some shopping to be done. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially when you go to places like Italy, clothing is one of those things that you want to bring back as much
exactly,
as possible.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, yeah. What else do you bring back? What are your big touristy souvenir-y things? Do you collect snow globes?
No.
Or are you someone that buys experiences?
No. Do you know what? Since I've travelled, I've always sort of I tried to bring something very small that's something that's very meaningful from almost every place that I visit. And my daughters say that my house looks like a museum, but to me, it reminds me of a special time and a special place or an experience that I've had, and that gives me a lot of pleasure. So I try and get something little,
the smallest
just a little
thing.
Memento,
yep.
but something that's very, very quirky from that place. So it holds special memories of the experiences that I've had while I've been travelling.
Excellent. Mm. What's your favourite thing?
do you know, it's very, very hard because each of them sort of like when I went to Nepal, I've got a prayer wheel from Nepal, and you know, that sort of is really
means something
exactly. Mm. And I can think of, I know exactly what I was doing and who I was with, and you know, and to me, it actually sort of triggers memories of the trip, and I really enjoy that.
Thank you so much. That was a great trip in everyone's mind to the Middle East, and thank you very much for sharing that with us, Rosie.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.